Welcome back to Eco Talk. You'll want to stick around for this segment because we'll be talking with Chip Heath. He is the co-author, along with his brother Dan, of a book out recently called Made to Stick, Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die. Chip is a professor of organizational behavior in the Graduate School of Business at Stanford University. And through his course, How to Make Ideas Stick, he teaches how to design more effective and lasting messages. And nowhere is that more important right now, especially than when it comes to the environmental message needing to get out. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, tell us why successful sticky ideas, and one of the ones you mentioned that most of us can relate to, is JFK's Man on the Moon speech or other modern-day urban legends, and what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, we've looked at all kinds of sticky ideas, ranging from urban legends, which are false ideas, to ideas like JFK's Man on the Moon speech, which was a profound motivating idea. And what we've tried to do is to distill some properties. So like JFK's speech was an unexpected idea. It seemed like science fiction at the time. But it was also incredibly concrete. I mean, nobody could misunderstand what a man walking on the moon would look like. And so everybody understood success in the same way, and everybody could work together to make that outcome achievable. And so what we find with all kinds of sticky ideas, ranging from the bad to the good, is that they share properties like unexpectedness and concreteness.
Interesting. I guess climate change would be, I mean, unexpected to some, not certainly scientists who have been studying it for 30 years, and it has been a little bit less concrete, becoming more, you know, just something that's coming into focus now.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big problems with the environmental movement is, like, we haven't come up with a language for talking about things. I mean, we're talking about some really concrete outcomes, but people didn't get excited about climate change until a paper came out in Science that said, by the way, hurricanes like the one that happened to Katrina are going to be more common if the climate changes. And so we talk in these abstract ways that mean things to people inside the movement, but they don't necessarily mean things to outsiders.
I have a personal anecdote about that. My sister-in-law, who lives in Miami, who never quite understood until Hurricane Wilma hit what I did for a living or what my passion and crusade is all about, they were without power for 11 days.
Yeah.
And it's no electricity, no air conditioning, no television, no garbage pickup. And she called and complained every few days till I finally said, well, Mary, this is what I do. I'm trying to ward off more of this. She goes, really? This is global warming? What can I do? And I said, well, start by, you know, buying a hybrid. And
right.
She now is a proud owner of a Prius, and she has started a trend in her pretty conservative Miami Shores neighborhood.
Hey, that's great.
Got real concrete there for the garbage was smelling. It was hot.
It was hot.
And she became a believer overnight. And that's after hearing me talk about it for years. That didn't do anything. So let's get back to, we talked about JFK's Man on the Moon project, and maybe that's why the Apollo project has been named that, the effort to get more renewable energy development going.
I think that's great. You'd have to tell me more about the Apollo project.
Basically, we should have 20% of our power coming from renewable sources by the year 2020, sort of like we can put a man on the moon. Bye.
Yeah. I think it's great, but what does it mean to have 20% by 2020? I mean, one of the examples that we talk about in the book is the Nature Conservancy in California. And at one point, they were faced with a fairly abstract goal like this because they had colored in the parts of the state map of California that were biologically important ecosystems that they wanted to save. And what they realized is they colored in 40% of the map. Now, historically, the Nature Conservancy has made its way by collecting dollars and buying land. That's a very concrete strategy. They call it inside the Nature Conservancy bucks and acres. But there's no way that you're going to do bucks and acres for 40% of the state of California. But yet, how do you get that across? How do you get that goal across? And how do you start talking about it to people? Well, you could talk about, well, let's save 2% a year for the next 20 years, but even that's pretty abstract and intangible. What they ended up doing is talking about, let's save 50 landscapes. And they gave each one of them a name. They could describe the kind of plants and animals that were in it. So there's an area of brown hills right outside of Silicon Valley, and they named it the Mount Hamilton Wilderness after the top peak in that. And they started describing it to people and saying, look, the Mount Hamilton Wilderness, it doesn't look very sexy. It's a bunch of grassy hills with an occasional oak tree, but it serves as the water purification device for the entire Bay Area. And here are the unique plants and animals that you find in that. And it's the largest intact wilderness outside of Yosemite. And now all of a sudden, people started getting excited about that and writing it into their green organizations, would write it into their plans for lobbying. The Packard Foundation put lots of money on the table. And so I think if the Apollo project is really going to succeed, they're going to have to move a step more tangible than 20% by 2020. It's kind of clever, it's alliterative, but it still doesn't have that concrete element that the Nature Conservancy finally got to when they started talking about specific landscapes as opposed to 2% 2% a year for 20 years.
Okay, let's get back to the concrete. One of the watershed events was, of course, Rachel Carson's Silent Spring book, and then that was a motivator, a big one for a generation of environmentalists. And then, of course, we had Earth Day 1970, and that got some folks mobilized. But, you know, saving the planet really has not engaged the mainstream American public yet. And again, Katrina, as you said, started to wake people up to smell the carbon. And then on the heels of that, Al Gore's movie, certainly that, I think, is going to go down as the turning point. And
right.
2006 will go down as the year that, you know, we did finally wake up. And I guess 2007 is yet to be written. What do we do about it?
Yeah, I think Bill McDonough is one of my heroes as an architect and designer that works with people to do something about environmental issues. And he goes in with a pretty radical message that basically, for a long time, nobody believed on either side. Because what he believes is that what's good for the environment can be good for business and vice versa.
But that's not so radical now. I remember when I first heard that from him 10 years ago, that surprised a lot. But aren't we seeing that more and more, that it saves money, it helps the bottom line to save energy?
Yeah, and I think the way that he's gotten his message across is by doing case studies and telling stories about them. So one of the stories that I heard from him, which is great, is going into Rohner Textile, so a Swiss textile manufacturing. They make the fabrics for the chairs that we sit on or in our cars or in our offices. And the Swiss government had declared that the trimmings from their bolts of cloth were hazardous waste because chemical dyes that we use in fabric dyes contain lots of toxic chemicals. So they started going to chemical companies and trying to find chemical dyes that were completely non-toxic. They started with 8,000 chemicals in common use, and they eliminated 7,962 of them. And with the remaining 38, though, they could make every color but black. And the amazing thing was that when they started reorganizing the factory around those chemicals, all of a sudden costs did drop because they no longer had to do fancy treatment of the process waste that were coming off of the fabric. Factory workers no longer had to wear hazardous waste suits to be in that production environment.
And look at Ray Anderson and Interface Carpets. They've really turned that, you know, not only turned that company around, but have turned his life around.
Exactly.
Mid-course correction, eco-evangelist extraordinaire. I want to make sure we get to, since we have many activists in our audience, you know, how you would recommend a highly effective environmental message or campaign be designed. What are the key ingredients?
Well, I think the story that we just told by Bill McDonough is exactly what we need to do. I think the message is starting to get across to the American people that this is a problem. But there are two things that you can do when you hear about a problem. One is that you can think about it and try to solve it. But what we know from lots of public health messages is that if you hold up a picture of a lung blackened by smoking and you tell smokers, look, this is what your lungs are going to look like in 5 years. You know, there are two things that smokers can do. One is they can change their behavior. The other is they can tune out your message. And I think what's remarkable about the Bill McDonough story and the Nature Conservancy story is they are success stories that give a ray of hope into we can turn this around. And I think what the environmental movement needs more of are those hopeful springboard success stories that make us feel like by taking action, we can do something about this.
It's interesting. When I first heard Bill McDonough speak, probably almost 10 years ago, I was almost depressed, actually, because what he was talking about was so fantastic and so, you know, needing to be looked at from a whole systems perspective. I thought, well, that sounds great, but that's utopia. We are
right.
So far from there. If it's really going to be all or nothing, it's going to be nothing unless Bill McDonough can clone himself.
Yeah. And I think the fact that Bill McDonough is out there and the Nature Conservancy are out there and there are people actively solving some of these problems is something that we want to tell those stories as much as possible to inspire other social entrepreneurs, other designers, other business people, other activists to do what they're doing.
Mm. I did one sticky tip that people still, years later, tell me about. They've never forgotten. You know, take your hangers back to the dry cleaners. It's not dirty. Doesn't have to be thrown away. Certainly, they don't need to mine for more metal just to make a clean hanger to take home a clean shirt. So
exactly.
Reuse them. People say they cannot forget that, and I've guilted them into taking their hangers back, and they demand that their dry cleaners do that. So that's my contribution to the planet. I'm done.
Yeah, and it's a good start, and the more hints like that, and the more behavioral tips that we get, the more likely we are to change things. What we found from lots of public health research is that if people have a bad habit, the way that you get them to pay attention to the fact that they have a bad habit is by pointing out simple, concrete steps that they can take to change things.
Mm.
And so if you just talk about the badness without giving them a way out, then they start.
I've heard that the solutions have to be commensurate to the magnitude of the problem. And you just gave me another anecdote. 5 years ago, a group of us mothers started Don't Be Fueled, Grassroots Campaign, Mothers for Clean and Safe Vehicles, Hybrids Not Hummers, in the wake of 9/11. We couldn't get soccer moms at our schools to pay attention to us. They just like couldn't be bothered. Now, those same women are saying, why don't they make a hybrid minivan, Betsy? You know, it took 5 years, but they have seen, you know, the dots have been connected. Now it's sticking. So, Chip Heath, thank you so much for your sticky ideas. I hope we've helped shed some light on how activists, organized and otherwise among us, can make our ideas have a little bit more staying power and action power.
Thank you for having me.
The book is Made to Stick, Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die. We'll be back with more green news and views you can use. That means stick, right after these messages.